TV Bible Study is a serious effort to study in depth every word of God. Each 30-minute lesson has been carefully arranged to assist you with your study of God's Word. And now for your TV Bible Study teacher, Richard Rogers.
We want to welcome you again to the TV Bible Study series. We're in a study of Bible history, and we begin today a brand new section. We begin today to study the books of Joshua through 2 Chronicles, which deals with the history of the Hebrew nation. This is really lesson 26 in our series of Bible history, and it deals primarily and specifically with the conquest of Canaan. It's found totally in the book of Joshua, chapters 1 through chapter 9, and next time we'll finish the study of the book of Joshua. I think it's good, before we get into any book of the Bible, to give a brief outline of it. In Joshua, the book can be divided into four parts. First of all, there's the period of preparation, in chapter 1, verse 1, through chapter 4, verse 18. Then there's the period of conquest, as they conquer the promised land, in chapter 4, verse 19, through the end of chapter 12. And then there's the division of the land, that starts in chapter 13, verse 1, and goes through 22, verse 34, where the land is divided among the 12 tribes in Levi, and the cities of refuge are listed. And then in fourth place, there's the farewell addresses of Joshua, in chapter 23:1 to 24, verse 33, where he charges Israel to obey completely and totally the law of Moses. Now let's follow together in the book of Joshua all of these points. Let's see, first of all, in the first few chapters, how God prepares Israel for the conquest of the promised land. In chapter 1, Jehovah charges the new leader, Joshua. You see, Moses is dead. Read with me in Joshua chapter 1, verse 1. Now it came to pass after the death of Moses, the servant of Jehovah, that Jehovah spake unto Joshua, the son of Nun, Moses' minister, saying, Moses, my servant, is dead. Now therefore arise, go over this Jordan, thou and all this people, unto the land that I do give unto them, even to the children of Israel. You see, Moses' life, and as long as he was alive, he hindered the possession of promised land. Moses was a great man of God. He was needed for the period of emancipation. But Moses is not a general, not a man of war. And now that war is to be the ardor of the day, Moses dies and goes to his reward, and Joshua becomes the leader. Now he charges Joshua to obey the law, to obey God's will, as Moses had done. And then says in verse 6, Be strong and of good courage, for thou shalt cause this people to inherit the land which I swear unto their fathers to give them. Then he said in verse 7, Only be strong and very courageous to observe all the law which Moses my servant commanded thee. Over and over again, he says in verse 9, Have I not commanded thee, be strong and of good courage. Be not affrighted. Neither be thou dismayed, for Jehovah thy God is with thee, whithersoever thou goest. Verse 6, Be strong and of good courage. Verse 7, Only be strong and very courageous. Verse 9, Be strong and of good courage. Don't be affrighted or dismayed. God, before he sends Joshua into the terrible battles that he will fight, tells him that he needs to be strong and courageous. And then in chapter 2, spies are sent out to look at the first city, the city of Jericho. And they come back and report on the kind of city it was. They were preserved there by a holy woman, a harlot of the city, whose name was Rahab. And by the way, the word harlot does mean, in its original meaning, holy woman. It doesn't mean that Rahab was a prostitute. It means that she was some kind of priestess, some kind of holy woman. But Rahab preserved them, and because of that, she will be the only one, she and her family, will be the only ones of all of the city of Jericho saved. And then in chapter 3, they come to the Jordan, chapter 3, verse 1 through 4, verse 18. They come to the Jordan, and God causes the Jordan to part, and they march through on dry land. And they set up in the middle of the river a monument of 12 stones, and they carry from the river 12 stones and set up a monument on the other side to the fact that God has delivered them and brought them in the promised land. Now in chapter 4, verse 19 beginning, and going all the way through chapter 9, verse 27, you have what can be called the central campaign of the conquest. As soon as they crossed from Shittim, Jordan River, into the country, the promised land, they encamp at Gilgal. Now, Gilgal becomes the base camp. It's at the northern end of the Dead Sea, just west of the Jordan, as Shittim had been at the northern end of the Dead Sea, just east of the Jordan. They don't fight any battles here at Gilgal. This is where they leave their people. And they'll come back to this place every time a battle is over. As soon as they arrive at Gilgal, the manna ceases. You see, in promised land, there's no need for the manna. Manna is for the wilderness. Now that God has brought them into the promised land, the manna ceases. They go up against the city of Jericho. And they take Jericho, as you well know, I'm sure, from having read the Bible before, in a very peculiar way. Jericho is a fortified city built on a mountain. Very difficult to take. And so God says, I will take the city for you. He says, you, when you take the city, when you go into the city, will kill all the men, you'll kill all the people. You'll burn all of the animals, and the only thing you'll save is the gold and the silver and the brass and the precious stones, and you'll put that in the treasury. You'll put that in the tabernacle as a thing that will later on sustain the worship and the service of God. This city was devoted unto God, the text says. Now, the word devoted comes from the Hebrew word harim, from which we get the word harem. That's a group of women completely devoted to the pleasure of one man. And so this was a harem unto God. It was a city devoted unto God. Everyone was to die. All the animals were to die. The precious things of the city were to come into the presence of God. Now, God commanded Joshua to do this with his army. He said, I want you to take all the men of war, the Ark of the Covenant, and the priest with ram's horns. And I want you to march around the city one time a day for 6 days. I want the priests to blow the trumpets. I want the ram horns to sound, but I don't want a man to lift up his voice. I don't want any shouting. I don't want any talking to each other. I just want you to march around the city. Now remember that these people in Canaan would know of the greatness of Joshua's army, that he defeated Sihon, that he defeated Og, that he defeated Balak. God had sent the hornet of fear before them, and Jericho would be afraid of Joshua's army. And now the people of Joshua, again, I don't know how many, maybe 600,000, 700,000 soldiers, march around that city one time. The priests are blowing the trumpet, and nothing happens. The next day, they march around that city one time. The priests are blowing the trumpet, and nothing happens. The third day, they march around that city. The priests are blowing the trumpets, and nothing happens. The fourth day, they march around that city. By the fifth day, they're getting used to these people marching around the city one time. I don't know whether they're frightened, whether they're curious, or whether they're mocking. The sixth day, they do the same thing. The seventh day, I'm sure that they thought they were going to do the same thing. But when one time they marched around, they just keep marching. And they march around twice. They march around three times, and four times, and five times, and six times, and then seven times. And then after they marched around the seventh time, the priest blow the trumpets even louder, and the people shout, and the walls fall down flat. Excavations have determined, by the archaeologists in their excavations, have determined that the walls of the city of Jericho that existed in Joshua's day fell from the inside out. You know, normally the battering rams would knock it from the outside in, wouldn't it? But history, the archaeology, the science of archaeology, in digging down into the city, has seen that in Joshua's day, the walls fell out. What caused that? Somebody says an earthquake. I know who caused the earthquake. The earthquake was caused because God said when you march around the seventh day seven times and blow the trumpets and the people shout, the walls will fall down. And Joshua and his army then run into the city, and they defeat the city of Jericho, and they utterly devote it unto God. Every man, every woman dies. All of the animals die. All of the precious things are brought into the sacrifice and into the tabernacle and into the sacrifice of God. Jericho has fallen. Jericho belongs to God. And it sounds like total victory, doesn't it? But I'm sorry to say that that was not total victory for the people of God. If we could have ended it there, if we could end Jericho's study there, then we would have said everything was all right. Everybody in Joshua's army was faithful unto God. But now we must go to the third place west of the Jordan. And here we'll come on defeat. At Gilgal, we established the base camp. At Jericho, we found victory and fame. But now at Ai, we're going to find defeat and discipline. Ai is north of the city of Jericho and west. And here, a small city is found. Not nearly as powerful, nearly as big, or nearly as fortified as the city of Jericho. And yet I read in chapter 7 and verse 1, Joshua 7, verse 1. Read this with me. But the children of Israel committed a trespass in the devoted thing. For Achan, the son of Carmi, the son of Zabdi, the son of Zerah, of the tribe of Judah, took of the devoted thing, and the anger of Jehovah was kindled against the children of Israel. You see, Israel exists as a large family. They're not simply a nation of 12 tribes. They're the family of Abraham and of Isaac and of Jacob. And a family situation is this. If one member of the family is to be found guilty, then all of the family is in some degree guilty. Israel has committed a trespass because one man has taken of the devoted thing. Now Joshua sees Jericho is to be followed by Ai, which is by Beth-Aven on the side of Bethel. It might be good on your map when you place Ai there, also to place Bethel there. Because Ai is the fortress city that guards Bethel. And if Ai falls, then Bethel falls, for Bethel itself is not a fortified city. Joshua sends some men up to spy out Ai. And they spy out Ai, and they return, and they say in verse 3 of chapter 7, let not all the people go up, but let 2,000 or 3,000 men go up and smite Ai. Let not all the people tar hither, for they are but few. He said, Ai is a small place. It will only take 2,000 or 3,000 of our people. Joshua should have asked God. He should have inquired of Jehovah to find out whether or not that's the thing that God wanted to do. But he doesn't do that. He does not inquire of Jehovah. He does not find out of God whether God wants him to take that city that way or not. But he sends at the word of the spies 2,000 or 3,000 people. And I read in verse 5, and the men of Ai smote of them about 36 men, and they chased them from the gate even unto Shebarim and under the descent, and the heart of the people melted and became as water. Why are they defeated? Are they defeated because they only sent 2,000 or 3,000? No, they're defeated because there's sin in the camp. And we'll look at that lesson at the end of our brief study here of the history. Joshua rent his clothes, and he fell upon the earth, and he prayed unto God, and he asked him, you know, why has all of this happened? Have you brought us in here only to deliver us unto the Amorites? Oh, I wish we'd been content to dwell east of the Jordan, Joshua said. Joshua doesn't truly and actually and totally believe in God on this occasion. And God said to him in verse 10, get up. He said, it's not a time just to pray. He says, get up in verse 10. Wherefore art thou fallen upon thy face? Israel hath sinned. Yea, they've even transgressed my covenant which I commanded them. They've taken of the devoted thing. They have stolen, they've dissembled, and they put it among their stuff. Therefore, the children of Israel cannot stand before their enemies. You see, they're not able to win now because of Achan's sin, because of the fact that they're sin in the camp. He says, in the morning, cause all the tribes to come by, and I'll choose a tribe. Call all the families to come by, and I'll choose a family. Cause all the men to come by, and I'll choose a man, and I'll let you know where the sin is. And you get all Israel there to look at it, and you make sure that you purge that sin from the camp. In the morning, the tribe of Judah is taken, the family of Zerah, and then finally Achan himself. And he confesses, and he's taken out, and he's stoned to death. And I read, when he was stoned to death, that Jehovah turned from the fierceness of his anger. There's a lot that needs to be learned there, and we're going to take some time to talk about it. Because one of the most needed things of study and needed points of discussion in the family, in a man's life, and in the church of the Lord today is the need of discipline. We live in an undisciplined society where everyone is basically doing what he wants to do. And he doesn't seem to feel responsibility to be a part of a whole, a part of a unit that is to be unified as powerful unto God. And that's especially needed in the church. God intends for every congregation of His people to be kept pure and honorable before Jehovah. Now I want us to take a look at a lesson from this portion of Bible history that might be called Sin in the Camp. And we've got about 6 points we want to look at here from the story of Achan and Joshua at the city of Ai. Remember why the trouble has come. The trouble has come because Achan has taken of a devoted thing, a thing that belongs unto God, and he's taken it unto himself in order to enrich his own circumstances of life and to make himself the honorable or the more honorable individual. He's a thief. He's a coveter. He's a materialist. He needs to be purged from the camp. Now look at this lesson on sin in the camp. The first point is this. Sin can exist in the camp and the leaders not be aware of it. For you see, Joshua and the elders of Israel were not at all aware that Achan had taken this devoted thing. And yet God held the camp guilty. Now the reason for that was the leaders should have known. As soon as the defeat was there, the leaders should have searched to find out what the problem was. Even before the defeat was there, if the leaders had known the camp like they ought to have known it, they would have found out about this circumstance. Evidently, Joshua had not broken his army down into small enough groups with leaders over each group to the point that the leader would know what was happening in the life of every individual soldier. In the book of Exodus chapter 18, Jethro, or Reuel, Moses' father-in-law, had told Moses to break the camp of Israel down into captains of thousands and captains of hundreds and captains of fifties and captains of ten. There was to be a captain over every 10 people. Evidently, Joshua hadn't followed totally that advice to the point that there was a leader that could have reported, "I saw Achan, one of my 10 men. I saw Achan take of a devoted thing, and we need to rebuke him. Now we need to purge him from the camp." Sin can exist in the camp. A sinner can exist in the church of the Lord and the leaders not be aware of it. Now that does not excuse them for not being aware of it. They need to divide the church up into so small a group that never does anybody get in any spiritual difficulty that it's not known by a leader of 10, who tells a leader of 50, who tells a leader of 100, who tells a leader of 1,000. If I go beyond that, who tell the elders themselves. So that the leaders of Israel, the leaders of the church of God, can know that sin exists in the camp. The second thing that this passage teaches us is that sin in the camp involves more than the sinner. For 36 Israelites are now dead because Achan sinned. Achan sinned and they went out to battle against Ai, and 36 of his brothers are now dead on the hill. Be not deceived. A little leaven leavens the whole lump, Paul said in 1 Corinthians chapter 5. No man's an island to himself. No man lives to himself and dies to himself. My life affects you if you're a part of my family. And your life involves me and affects me if I'm a part of your family. Sin involves more than the sinner. So for the sake of the others, the sinner needs to be purged if he'll not repent. He needs to be purged from the camp of God. In the third place, we find out that when sin is in the camp, it's a time for action and not for prayer. I mean, Joshua's on his face praying when he ought to be on his feet investigating. I remember one time when I preached for a congregation, we had an immoral man there that we needed to discipline, that we needed to withdraw from. We'd talked to him. Many of us had talked to him. We'd not been to him the times the Bible say one time and two times, but we'd been to him at least 20 times. And finally we met in a meeting, and somebody said, "What are we going to do about Charlie?" Now, his name wasn't Charlie, but that's the name I'll call anybody during this series. that I'm talking about, because I don't want to talk about them by name. But what are we going to do about Charlie and his immorality? And one of the good brothers said, well, we need to pray about it. And thank God another good brother said, yeah, but then what are we going to do? I mean, after we prayed about it, what are we going to do? Well, before the night was over, the brethren decided that they were going to have to withdraw from Charlie. That they were going to have to put him outside of the family, put him outside of the camp, lest his immorality affect more than just Charlie. You see, when sin is in the camp, it's a time for prayer. It's a time for prayer, surely. But it's a time for action and not just for prayer. In the fourth place, we learn that when sin is in the camp, it makes victory impossible. God says as long as you tolerate this situation, you will not be able to stand before your enemy. They not only had fallen once and 36 of their brethren had died, but God says you will continually fall. You will never be able to stand before your enemies unless you purge this sin from the camp. The church of the Lord will never be victorious. We'll never preach the gospel to every creature under heaven. We'll never affect the community and turn it from immorality to morality. We'll never be able to benevolently care for the needs of those that are poor and downcast and downtrodden. We'll never be able to be victorious for God if we tolerate immorality, indifference, and sin in the camp. In the fifth place, when sin is in the camp, it needs to be made known to all. You can't keep it hidden. It's got to be manifested to all of Israel. You see, God says in the book of Joshua, in verses 16 through actually the end of the chapter, gather all of Israel together and then begin the investigation. Then begin to find out what tribe and then what family and then what man. So here's all of the multitudes of Israel gathered together. And I don't know how they determined it. Perhaps, you know, he just inquired of God, or perhaps lots were cast and God directed the lots. I don't know how. But somehow all of Israel sees their sin in Judah's camp. And then all of Israel sees that there's sin in Zerah's family. And then all of Israel sees that Achan is the sinner. And Achan is then asked to confess. And Achan said in verse 20 of chapter 7, truly I have sinned against the God of Israel. I saw among the spoil of Babylonia's mantle and 200 shekels of silver and 50 shekels of gold. I saw them. I coveted them. I took them, I hid them, and behold, they're under my tent. You see, he confessed openly. That wasn't enough, for no man will ever be convicted on his own confession. They went to his tent, they dug under his tent, and they found there the very things he said would be there. And they brought them back, and they showed them to all of Israel. The guilt was manifested unto all. Everybody in the congregation needs to ultimately be made aware of the sin. In Matthew 18, Jesus says, if my brother has aught against me, I'm to go to him alone and talk to him. If he doesn't hear me, I'm to take two or three. If he doesn't hear them, I am to tell it to the whole church. All of the congregation is to know. And then the last point, the sixth point, the whole congregation then pronounces the judgment. The whole congregation judges, not Joshua and the elders, but the whole congregation. It says in verse 25, latter part, all Israel stoned him with stones, and they burned them with fire and stoned them with stones. His family had been a part of his sin. They had known of it. They had been a part of the hiding of it. So all of the sinners are now purged from the camp. But notice, the whole congregation does it. In 1 Corinthians chapter 5, speaking of church discipline, Paul says, you being gathered together with my spirit, deliver such a one unto Satan, that the punishment inflicted by the many shall be sufficient and adequate for the man that is sinned. The whole congregation is to be involved. I really believe that you need to take a very serious look at these points. The next day, after they've stoned Achan to death, they go out against the city of Ai, and they send a few men against it, and the men of Ai chase them, expecting to defeat them as at the first. And instead of defeating them, the people are totally and completely destroyed in a battle that Joshua fights. And they are victorious now because of the fact that they have purged the sin from the camp of Israel. You see, when sin is purged, it brings about the victory of the people of God. That's the second great victory in the land of Palestine. And so we see very simply that we cannot trust in our own things or in our own ways, but we must indeed trust in God. Sin can exist and we not know it. Sin involves more than the sinner. It's a time for action and not just for prayer. It makes victory impossible. It needs to be made known to all. The whole congregation then will judge. Now, there's one other thing that occurs in this campaign. A people from a nearby city, the city of Gibeon, come and they make it appear as if they've been on a long journey. They come and they make it appear as if they're from a long way away, when really they're just close at hand. The city of Gibeon is just next to the city of Ai and Bethel. And they say, look, we don't want you to come fight against us. We want to make an agreement with you and a covenant of peace. Joshua, again, does not inquire of God. He simply makes that covenant with the men of Gibeon. And because he does, and because of their deceit, he says to them in chapter 9, verses 1 to 27, that you from now on will be the hewers of wood and the drawers of water for my camp. You will be my servants and my slaves. Now let's look, in summary, at the three things that occurred as far as cities that were taken in this conquest, and see the things of importance there. At Jericho, we saw that there they had victory and fame. Victory over the people and fame for Joshua. At Ai, because of the sin of Achan, they had defeat and discipline. They could not stand before their enemies, and God disciplined them to teach them to trust in Him. And with the agreement of the Gibeonites, there was compromise and service. They should have defeated Gibeon. He should have inquired of God. But because he did not, then he had compromised his standing with God, but he forced the Gibeonites to be servants unto God. I think that there are two important lessons for us to learn here. Not three. Number one, the lesson of faith. Well, that's what called the cities of Jericho to fall down. Number two, the lesson of purity and commitment to God, because that's what caused defeat at Ai. And number three, the lesson of making no compromise with anyone near or far to follow completely the way and the will of God. I enjoyed today's study. God bless you in the study of His Word.
These lessons are available on video cassette tapes for use with video cassette players or a TV station broadcasting. Audio cassette tapes are also available. This systematic study of the Bible was designed for a variety of uses. Teacher training programs, substitute teacher needs, community Bible study programs on local TV, and hospital closed circuit programs, to mention a few. God bless your study of His Word.